Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600. And thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks. And this morning we are checking in with Bob Donovan, who's our marriage consultant here on The Morning Show. I love this opening line, Bob. Couples are stressed out. You don't say, Bob. Why? Why do you say that? Why do you say couples are stressed out? What do you mean by that?
Oh, come on. Let's just look at the people around you, right?
Yeah.
I mean, just think about it, right? We've had just unprecedented economic loss with jobs. This whole social isolation has just taken a toll. There's a practical side of this, of pressures of working at home, school at home. I mean, just being limited and going out. The emotional toll on the anxiety of everything. And even just, like, I call it COVID management stress. Just how do you deal with it? How do you deal with even the vaccine? How do you deal with going out? How do you deal with masks? So all of that has kind of led to, again, just couples being stressed out. There's markers to this. You can look at, well, how do we know that, right? Counseling hours. I mean, I'm on a board of counseling, and we're seeing unprecedented hours. I just saw this website called LegalTemplates.com. It's a legal document template website that couples can download information. 57% increase in people's looking at separation and divorce documents.
Awesome.
So there's a lot of signs that indicate couples are stressed out.
So how do we go to this next phase? I mean, granted, the pandemic's not over, but we're kind of nearing towards, we keep saying, like, this new normal or sort of what it was like pre-pandemic time. So, like, where do you go from here? What's next?
Yeah, I wish I had a clear answer to that, because what's next is we don't know. Like, it's funny. I was on we have a dad's group at church Saturday, and I just called this period limbo-ness. We're in this limbo land state. And then I looked up what limbo means, and it means an uncertain period of waiting on a decision or resolution.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's where we are. Like, right? We're certainly trending in a good direction.
Mm-hmm.
We're not clear yet. You just can't even go to church. We go to church, but
it's weird.
It's weird.
Yeah, everything's weird.
That's everything right now. We're not normal. We're not back with lockdown. We're in this limbo. We're all waiting to come out of it. So we're all in this period of limbo-ness, which is basically uncertainty.
Yeah.
So it is, again, I'm not sure how that affects couples. I don't think it helps them. Maybe it does, because we're trending out of something, but we don't know we're trending into something when. So we are in this uncertain period right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think naturally, Bob Donovan, I feel like as humans, we are so programmed and we're very scheduled. We're very intentional. So I think when things are so out of whack, you know, one or two things, we can kind of adjust. But I think when your entire world is turned upside down, and then it's not like, hey, we're going to go back to the way things are. We actually don't know that. We may never go back to the way things are. Like, we still can't determine if one vaccine is enough, when we'll be able to get rid of masks. Like, we actually have no clue really what the future looks like. So what we do have some ideas about are things that you could still do even in either pandemic, post-pandemic times that work for couples to build. Could you give us some tips on things we shouldn't lose focus on? Like, what are some surefire ways that we can actually build our relationships?
Yeah. I think one would just couples just being intentional about recognizing where we are. I mean, just kind of ruminating on, well, what if, and I can't wait until, like, can't wait until what? We don't know. So you got to be intentional about where you are as a married couple.
Mm-hmm.
And number one would be just be intentional about addressing your own emotional needs.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a tricky one, because we are just all different. You know, how I process things is different than how Karen does. You know, you and Derek, I mean, it's the same thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
One might be completely okay with going out. One might be still kind of more safety conscious. So I met with a guy Thursday morning, and he didn't want to meet inside. We had to sit outside in a damp, cool, misty area. And I found myself getting annoyed. But you know what? That's what he needed.
Right.
So you have to be aware of your emotional needs and not expect your spouse to be where you are.
Okay.
And I would say that if you're addressing, again, and one thing I've seen, Melissa, anxiety is just off the charts right now.
Oh,
it really
absolutely.
Is people
absolutely.
Off the charts.
Mm-hmm.
So a tip is you got to reach out. And even if it's to a friend, that's what my buddy did Thursday. He just sat there and he talked for like an hour and a half.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So he reached out to a friend. Your church has so many good resources. And like I said, you know, the counseling hours are up like 20-30%. That's actually a good thing.
Yeah, people want help.
People, mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So number one, be intentional about your needs and then just get help where that's necessary.
Mm-hmm. I love this next one because it's like stop the negativity and criticism. And I was talking earlier in the show about Gary Thomas at church yesterday because he crushed this idea of like cancel culture and how, you know, we so focus a lot of times on like, well, I'm a woman versus a man, or I'm this race versus that, or I'm this class versus this class, or I'm this age versus this. And like, it's all nonsense. It's not that it doesn't matter. That's not to say in an offensive way that it doesn't matter, but it's like, we're missing the whole thing. We're missing the whole thing when we constantly criticize other people and we don't actually like take a step back and go, okay, wait, what's really going on? What's happening in front of us?
Yeah. You know, people don't realize that is a decision you make. Mm-hmm. I'll use the metaphor that everybody uses, right? Glasses half full or glass half empty.
Right.
People decide to look at the world in a half empty perspective. That's a decision.
Mm-hmm.
People decide on getting up each morning and criticizing and being negative on their spouse.
Yeah.
Easy to do because, again, anxiety is high. We're still in this uncertain
period.
Well,
and it's a safe place.
Easy to do.
It's easy to attack the people who you love and you're closest to. That's very easy to do.
Yeah, you're spending the most time with them. Mm-hmm. But you know what? Again, that is an intentional decision you're making to look at the negativity, to criticize your kids, to criticize your spouse.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's why I said this, like stop the negativity and stop the criticism.
Mm-hmm.
Decide to be different.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we're talking to Bob Donovan this morning, our marriage consultant here on the show. And we have one more tip that I do want to talk about in one second, Bob. But really quick with the stop criticizing. You know, it's interesting. We used to play this game when we were kids, and we used to hate it. We couldn't stand it. But it's funny. Now that we're older, we're like, oh, I know why my parents did that. Every time one of us got into a fight and like nobody could see where the other person was coming from, my mom and dad would sit us down. And whichever kid was the one that was, we'll call it on trial for whatever it was, we would have to all go around and say one thing we liked about that person. It was infuriating. But then you started to figure out like, oh, okay, so wait, hold on. Like, I'm mad because this person took the last cookie and that was infuriating. But like at the core of it, my sister or my brother, they're a really good person. So, you know, that idea of like taking a step back and instead of always reaching with our criticizing foot, maybe just thinking really fast and trying to figure out, wait, hold on, are you really as bad as I'm saying you are in this moment? You know, like I think just being thoughtful sometimes really can make the big difference. What do we do next? You know, we've been dealing with pandemic times. It's been incredibly stressful. Bob, who actually is a marriage counselor at our local church in Fairfield at Black Rock, says that counseling hours have been up across the board 25-50%, which, you know, shows that people are looking for that kind of help and they want answers. They want to figure out, where do I go next? So a couple of tips that Bob has shared this morning: being intentional about addressing emotional needs, stopping the negativity and criticism, especially on your spouse and your children. I mean, and if you want to do a check thing, you could do like my mom and dad did, which is go around the room and say one thing you like about each other. And then you have one more tip here, Bob, which is each and every day, do this. Do what?
Yeah. So I really love this one. And it's so funny that this just came to me Saturday morning, and I was just thinking about this segment. Three things. Number one, do something for yourself each week. Right? Do something for yourself each week. Go to the gym. If you play golf, play golf. Take it for a walk. Do something for yourself, something you enjoy doing for you, and be aware of that. I'm doing this for my own mental health. So do something for yourself. Do something for your spouse. Right? Do something for your husband and for your wife that they appreciate. Not what you think they need, what they need.
Mm. Yeah.
Karen came to me last week and sat down and said, she said, I would really, really appreciate if you spent some time going through the garage and reorganizing the garage.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
there you go.
I got it.
Okay, I got it.
I will. So do something for your spouse. Right?
Yeah.
And the third one is do something together.
Mm.
And do something together. Like, be intentional, right? Whether it's taking a walk together, whether it's a little getaway. Even just going out to dinner now is something special. But, mm-hmm. you know, name it and claim it. Like, just, we're doing this for us.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's something as simple as just, you know, selecting a TV series to watch. Like, that's
yes.
your thing to do.
Yes. Yes.
I saw just this morning, Focus on the Family has something brand new, a 6-part video series called Finding Hope for Your Hurting Marriage, right?
Mm-hmm.
Great. A great thing to do. Not a lot of money. Again, do something for yourself, something for your spouse, and something together.
Yeah, and I love that this is something you should strive for every week, because it really could be like 5 minutes, 10 minutes. It really isn't going to take up, when you look at the amount of hours that go into a week. I know, look, as a working mom of a toddler, I always feel like there's not enough hours in the day. But, however, I will say,
yeah.
if you love your marriage and you love yourself, you can find, you know, like, for example, I know for my husband, he's a neat freak. I also love that we have a clean house, but sometimes I think I have more of a realization than my husband does, that we've got two dogs and a toddler and we're potty training. Like, there's only so much
right.
we can do.
Right.
But, you know, like for Derek, it's important to have the dishes done. It's important to
yep.
have, if laundry is stacked, it should be put away. Like, little things like that. And you know what? Taking the 10 minutes to just divvy up where all the folded laundry that's been sitting on top of the dryer has been. Like, divvying that up, my husband comes home and is like, wow, my wife loves me. It's amazing how little things like that really make a difference. And I love this idea, Bob, of like, even just finding a TV series to watch. It's something as simple as that, where you're knocking out a couple of things there, right? I mean, find something that you love. For example, in our household, I'm a huge Disney nut. My husband, not so much. He respects it. But like, a great middle ground is the fact that my husband loves Star Wars. Now, Star Wars was obviously bought out by Disney. I don't
right.
particularly love Star Wars, but like, my husband and I decided, we went through all 9 episodes. We watched all
yep.
9 episodes of Star Wars together, and it was awesome. It was very, very
yep.
cool. Yeah, it was really,
yep.
really cool.
Easy to do, but again, and you notice my segment here, the process here is, one is take care of yourself, two, right, do something for him or her,
mm-hmm.
and then three is just do something. So there's a really, that's not random. I mean, do yourself, your spouse, and together. And when you do something together, it's not often couples have the exact same need. So just pick something that's a middle ground that you both like want to do together. Whether
mm-hmm.
it's, again, easy to do, but being the whole key, I'm saying a lot, is being intentional about all this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just deciding, not sliding, into life. It's easy to just, especially where you are, like with a small kid and dogs and everything, there probably aren't enough hours in a day, but
no, it's crazy.
It's often, it doesn't take much. It's mm-hmm. often the little things with this.
Yeah, no, it's very true. And Bob, I think if people want to get more in depth to this, they want to look at more maybe advice from you and hear how they can sort of better their relationships in these very uncharted territory times that we live in. How can people contact you?
Yeah. Best way is just shoot me an email. It's bdonovan, DONOVAN, at blackrock.org.
Okay. Well, Bob, we so appreciate always having you on every other week. Thank you so much. And we'll talk in
All
a couple
right,
of weeks.
All right. Be good.
All right. Thank you. You too.
Fighting against injustice across Connecticut, Melissa in the Morning checks in with the Commission on Human Rights and Opportunities on WICC 600.
In the United States, women have to work an average of 3 extra months a year to earn the same amount as a man does. That's according to CT Data Collaborative. This time last year, the Equal Pay Dam, March 31st, this new report came out talking about the wage gap that we see between women and men. Now, on a national standard, women make about 18% less than a man does. But here in Connecticut, it's about 16% less. Now, while we are lower than the national average, it still shows something around like $10,000 less in income for the average woman compared to a man. Now, this morning, we have attorney Michelle Kuehler, who's here with us from the Commission on Human Rights and Opportunities. And Michelle, first question, why are wage gaps still existent in 2021?
Well, you know, that's a good question. So I think, you know, one of the predominant things that we've been trying to work on and that many groups have been trying to work on is that there's still this kind of anonymousness about what people make and the leverage that people have in terms of bargaining their positions. And so one of the things that happens is that we don't know when we go into a job, for the most part, what people make. And so that kind of anonymousness in what we make is a big problem. And so the legislature has been working the last several years and trying to make full disclosure in what salary ranges are so that when a person goes to a job, you know what you can expect for that position. Because you can imagine if one of the reasons we find out about these unequal pay claims is when somebody does find out that their male comparator, because it's generally men who are making more than women, is making a lot more. And so, you know, even though you mentioned the equal pay day, you know, even when controlled for leave time because women have the children, even that doesn't make much of a difference in terms of the unequal pay aspects of it. Because you can imagine that that should make a difference, right? When people leave, not every woman just leaves the workforce. A lot of women come back into the workforce, yet they still make less. Why is that, right? It shouldn't be so, but it is. And so one of the reasons why is that there is this anonymousness in what people make. And you know how it is. It's a taboo subject. People don't want to talk about what they make. And now I work in a union environment, and so it's splashed out there for everybody to see. Everyone's pay grade is there. Wow. You can look it up online. You know exactly what people make. And so the legislature the last several years has been working on bringing that into the light. And so there's a bill actually moving through the legislature this year that would require employers to give salary ranges for each position, and these are private employers, so that people are fully aware of what the range is and that it's not a secret when they go into it, so that they don't find out later on that their male counterpart is making more than they are. And I think also if you look at research and study, males tend to have a bigger bargaining position when it comes to bonuses, when it comes to hiring bonuses. They've just given more when they start jobs. And so, you know, employers seem to take that, they need to have that person and they are going to give them more. So
I'm curious about this as well, Michelle, because I know I've experienced this just from being younger, but still bringing the same, if not more, to the table than other counterparts have in the past. Do you think age is something that needs to be looked at? So, like, example, when you say that we should have pay ranges, like, hey, if you want to take this sales position, this is what we're offering. It doesn't matter your gender, your age, whatever. If you're bringing the same thing to the table, even if you haven't done that job for, let's say, like I've done a job maybe 10 years less than somebody else who works here, but we're bringing the same quality thing. I mean, is that being looked at? Because I do think sometimes it's hard to yell, hey, this is a gender gap, when in fact it's like, oh, no, it's your experience, or no, it's your age, or no, it's that you're not bringing this to the table. But then you look at other people and you think, well, this doesn't compute. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know if it's just gender gaps that we're seeing.
I do. And I think it's sometimes it's an opportunity gap, too. And so that, you know, different people, maybe a male is given better opportunity because they are a male. And so the thing about this statute, this proposed bill that's going through, is that it would really benefit age, too. It wouldn't be just a gender benefit. It would be an everybody benefit, because it would be clarity for all. And so that if you, as age, and that was your protected class you were concerned about, you would be able to know what the position requirements were and also what the salary range was. And usually, you know, when you see a requirement, it'll say a base of what it is that they're looking for and that you should qualify for. And so that it shouldn't be that people's experience are considered. And that is often when we see cases, a reason that's given, well, you know, X has 30 years of experience and Y has 10 years of experience, but you know, the quality of that experience needs to be considered too, like what you're saying. You could have really incredible experience in 10 years that somebody in 20 years doesn't, you know? And so we're always looking at all of the factors that need to be considered. So this bill would consider all of that because it's really going to give, like I said, take the veil off of what the ranges are. So it would be helpful for age too, of course.
So I have to imagine, Attorney Michelle Cuellar, the reason that maybe it's not passing right away, is it because people feel almost like a HIPAA violation? You shouldn't have to see what I make?
I think that it's a way, I think employers are always just very cautious in general. I want to hope in my perfect world they're not intending to do the things that they do, but it's like anything else. People are, they don't like to disclose at first because they're afraid. But I think once they do, and this is, you know, we're in the middle of the session right now, and this bill actually has gotten out of committee and it's hopefully moving on its way. I think it's just the unknown, and that once it happens, there's been some other bills that have gone through that have addressed this kind of secrecy of what people make, and it's been fine. You know, the world hasn't come to an end. People's lives haven't been destroyed. I think, you know, leveling the proverbial playing field is not destructive, and I think it's just that. It's the fear of the unknown as opposed to it destroying the corporate world, you know, that moves ever so slowly. And I think that's the bigger problem, is the unknown, and not that it will actually be destructive if it does happen.
Attorney Michelle Cuellar, thank you so much for coming on this morning and talking about this. And we'd love an update to see what's going on in Hartford as soon as we get one. Thank you.
You're welcome. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
The latest from the state capitol about your own neighborhood. Connecticut Senate Majority Leader Bob Duff stops by Melissa in the Morning. Now on WICC 600.
Senator Duff, I was actually sharing with our audience earlier this morning. We had a pair of really tragic shootings happen in Hartford. A three-year-old boy who was shot and killed while just sitting in the car. And then another was a 16-year-old New Britain male who was shot and killed as well in Hartford. I think I just have to start off with, I know that the president last week kind of started off with some gun law initiatives and sort of getting the ball rolling. But, you know, I worry sometimes that we focus so much, Senator, on mass shootings, when in fact we have a real issue just here in Connecticut with our inner city shootings, Bridgeport, New Haven, Hartford being some of the biggest. What are sort of your thoughts on what can be done on the local level to stop youth gun violence?
Well, good morning. And it is a real problem. When I saw the news about the three-year-old being shot and killed, it was something that just really shakes you to your core. And I do believe that this violence that we have, and Connecticut is not immune from, is, you know, issue that we need to deal with locally. But frankly, gun violence and gun violence prevention is an issue that is a national problem. We're one of, you know, really one of the only countries in the world that has these kind of issues, whether it is mass shootings or whether it's these type of violent types of events that happen in our cities that we have got to get a handle on. And the reason I mention that is because Connecticut has such very strong gun laws. The thing that the president is looking at with regard to gun violence prevention through his executive orders are things that Connecticut has done from a long time ago.
Right.
And we have seen a slow and steady drop in gun violence over the years, which has been really great. But we also have these other issues in our cities that's a problem. And until we have a national strategy on this, it's going to fall on the states. But it really does need to be a national strategy, because if you can have get a gun in one state easier than you can in another state, it really does hamper the efforts of our own state and what we're able to do, which is one of the reasons why, you know, there's still the proliferation of illegal guns throughout this nation, is because in some states, just walk into a store and you can go walk out with it. In Connecticut, you can't have that.
Right.
Specifically to your issue of in the cities, When we passed the Sandy Hook bill years ago, there's a program called Project Longevity, and which has been funded, which has not, I don't think, been funded at the level it's needed to have been funded the last couple of years. We've had a lot of discussions about that in our state budgeting, and also even prior to that, how much that is needed in our state.
What is that?
That's what I was going to explain. Yeah. So Project Longevity is a program that really is from the ground up in some of the cities that are more prone to gun violence. So whether it's Hartford or Bridgeport or New Haven, and that helps to reduce gun violence. And it's actually had a very very good effect on reducing gun violence. And it doesn't mean that you just have more cops swarming the streets. What it does is it builds programs. It gets people who are in the community to be more invested in helping to make change. I've heard from folks in Hartford and other places who have really embraced Project Longevity, and it has made a real difference. Now, it's not prevented all the violence that we would have liked. So,
sure.
But we can't call it a failure because of that. But we see these types of tragedies like we saw on Saturday and over the weekend, and we know that we just have to continue to do more. But this is why we want to make sure that we just don't, you know, look at mass shootings and view it as that. But we look at these other types of gun violence incidents that happen and understand that we've got to tackle that as well. I want to just underscore, this is why gun laws around the country are so important, because, again, just having strong gun laws in Connecticut is not enough. We need strong gun laws around the nation. If the nation would, if Congress would pass laws like we have here in the state of Connecticut, I am sure, and I would predict, and I am very confident about the fact that this nation would see the type of drop in gun violence that we have seen in Connecticut post Sandy Hook.
It's interesting, Senator Bob Duff, that, you know, with Hartford, just to take Hartford for an example, we've heard from Mayor Luke Bronin multiple times that in the last year we've seen such an uptick in youth gun violence because of the pandemic, whether it's that people are out of a job, they are not in school, whatever the case may be. They've seen an uptick there because of the pandemic. But, you know, what I find is at least I'm curious about is, OK, so we just got all this money from the federal government. We're kind of building up our cities and towns again. Kids are back in school, and yet something like this weekend happens. And you can't really ignore the fact that this can't just be pandemic related. I mean, like, Bridgeport's done better so far this year, but Hartford has not. Hartford's done worse. So I'm just curious, like, you know, does this come down to gang related? Does this come down to getting guns in the hands of younger people? Like, what exactly are we finding is the big issue in Connecticut?
Well, I think you're saying it. I think all the above is probably the answer. And this is not just a Connecticut issue. You're seeing this nationally as well. While you're still seeing crime drop, and a couple of years ago, crime was, even violent crime, was at the lowest level it's been in decades. So there has been a bit of an uptick. That doesn't mean that the streets are unsafe or that we're back to, you know, 1980 or 1970 types of numbers and from gun violence. We're not. But that does mean we need to redouble our efforts to make sure that we keep the streets safe and we keep people safe and we don't have these types of incidents that happen here like we saw over the weekend. But again, this is why it's really important to pass strong legislation nationally in order to take these guns off the streets so that there is not the access to illegal weapons like we see people can get in other states. It's one of the reasons why if anybody studies, you know, Chicago and why Chicago is so violent, the proliferation and the access to guns outside of Illinois is one of the reasons why Chicago has some of the violence that it does. And, you know, here in Connecticut, it's very, very difficult to get guns. And you have to, you know, go through a lot of background checks and a lot of hurdles, but still there's still the access, I'm sorry, there's the illegal way that people are able to get their weapons. Mm-hmm. And without a clear national strategy and a clear enforcement of that nationally, unfortunately, we continue to see these types of problems. And we'll in Connecticut, we'll do what we have to do, and we'll continue to push down gun violence and gun crimes. Mm-hmm. But because of a lack of a national strategy and lack of good, strong gun laws that are really supported by over 90% of the people in this country,
right,
we're going to continue to see these types of things because it's a failure on the part of our federal government by not enacting this. And I know my colleagues here in Connecticut on this on a national level are working very, very hard to pass good national strong gun control laws.
Senator Bob Duff, we always appreciate your time. Thank you so much, and we'll talk again next week.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you.
What's going on in the Capitol and how it affects you? State Senator Tony Wong joins Melissa in the Morning right now on WICC 600.
So I know over the weekend it was pretty busy in Fairfield, Senator Wong, people who are voicing their concerns about zoning legislation. First of all, do we have any updates from Hartford about planning and zoning bills?
Good morning, everyone. And it's always busy in Fairfield.
That's true.
And there are bills sitting on the Connecticut General Assembly House and Senate calendar that are vehicles for dramatic changes in zoning, land use, and affordable housing that were passed out of the Planning and Development Committee. There are three concepts that I'll quickly share. There's a bill, House Bill 6611. It's called the Fair Share Housing. It actually kind of reformulates a requirement for affordable housing data and requirements as compared to the current Section 830G that people hear about so much. And if towns don't meet it, then it literally establishes a legal consent decree that people can sue the town for any zoning restriction, and literally the courts will then decide how planning and zoning and allocations of funding, allocations of housing will apply. So it again allows the court to take over from local municipalities in regards to how they can manage planning and zoning and how it fits within the plan and design of the town.
Versus talking to like town owners, not town, town like leaders and zoning, you know, managers for towns and cities, correct?
Absolutely. Okay. It is people get offended, advocates offended when I say it's almost like a legal stick to tell people that you're not doing enough and that we're making you do it from a court perspective. Another bill that is of a significant consideration is Senate Bill 1024, and it's a desegregate Connecticut advocacy bill. And one of the things that is encouraging is through the public hearing process, through our deliberations, some components were taken out that were very, very challenging for communities, one of which was transit-oriented development and Main Street development, which kind of grants it pretty much has of right, so that within a half mile, the concept was that within a half mile of a transit development, the state can require, without any public hearing, multiple unit designs into that region because it's transit-oriented development initiatives. It's a noble concept, but the idea of has of right, which takes away local planning and local input, is really a strong and powerful statement by the state to say we know better than local municipal planning leaders. Another part of 1024 is the fact that we significantly remove input from local municipal leaders in regards to definition of architectural design and consistency of neighborhoods, that you could potentially have a single-family property that sits on an acre of land, and the possibility of somebody buys the next door and want to put in a 100-unit apartment.
Like a high-rise or something, sure.
Eight stories high. Under the auspices of these kind of legislation, you as a property owner and you as a town cannot say
you have no say.
that's frustrating for me. Another part of 1024 is it significantly increases sewer and septic capacity, because when you're looking to build out density, you're going to have to put incredible pressure on environmental and watershed impact. This significantly increases it. So 1024 is challenging. There's so many other bills. Another bill that's being put forth is if a town does not meet the moratorium in regards to the number of affordable housing, then the statewide property tax that's been bandied around would apply only to those towns that do not qualify.
Well, and so I know you and I have talked about that. Brenda Kupchick and I think have talked about that, because the moratoriums, based on when they were done, can be outdated. So I know that's been also. Is that something that Fairfield residents are worried about?
Well, that is the reason we got together over the weekend.
Okay.
Is through your efforts, through our constant conversation, we're letting people know what's happening in Hartford.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to dramatically impact their lives.
Yeah.
And their properties, and that the state is implementing or potentially implementing policy that will have a dramatic impact on what they do day in and day out. And what I've learned from that rally and the extent of the interaction was, still at this moment, so few people realize the potential impact of the proposed legislation. Most people say that is an overreach, that is an egregious abuse of power, and it takes away my personal property rights, it takes away local control, and they say they couldn't possibly be thinking that way. But unfortunately, when they start learning how far it's come along, these bills are literally sitting on the House and Senate calendar and can be taken up for a vote at any time in the future. And when they realize that, they shake their head and saying, that can't be possible.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, things are happening up in Hartford, and we get caught up with what's happening in Washington and,
right,
and et cetera, that what's happening in Hartford will have a far greater impact on their daily living in Connecticut,
totally,
than most people realize.
You know, and Senator Huang, I have a question about this. I'm not sure if this has come up, but in speaking with Governor Lamont a couple of times on the air, specifically about how we've seen a huge surge in people coming into Connecticut to buy property because of the pandemic, mostly coming from New York. You know, his big thing is, oh, like, we must be doing something right. You've got people flooding into Connecticut. And I've said to him, okay, like, let's just take a step back. It's not because Connecticut has become more affordable. It's because of what happened with the pandemic. And we've seen it in New York. I mean, my God, that was the epicenter. And Connecticut, I think, did things, I think, a little more correct in handling the pandemic compared to New York. And people felt safer coming to the suburbs. That being said, though, are there discussions happening in Hartford about property values? Because I think it is inexpensive. It's very expensive, I should say, to live in Connecticut. I think specifically Fairfield and New Haven counties, it is very hard to live here and live comfortably. It's very expensive. And I think if we're looking at, oh, because of the last year, we've seen so many people coming in here and we've got this false narrative, I'm wondering if that plays a part. Like, what about our property values? So, you know, if I'm living, like you said, I'm living where I've got a lot of acreage, I've got a lot of privacy. So if my next door neighbor decides, hey, like, I'm going to sell to a property manager who wants to now put a high rise there, I don't feel like I've got that privacy anymore, which brings down the property value of my home. Why isn't that being considered? Do you think the pandemic has an effect on that?
The pandemic has impacted so much of our lives in regards to the demand on real estate. That's quite evident. But people are leaving high density settings to move to a more single family entity,
mm-hmm,
more separation of space. And that's what has made Connecticut very appealing, is our diverse range of communities and housing.
Mm-hmm.
And the challenge is that these proposals are looking to increase density. And that is counter to this COVID impact of having
what makes
separation
us
in space.
Mm-hmm.
Now the motivation is noble. it understands that we as a state have a critical housing need. And but the challenge is, how do we create opportunities that are affordable, accessible, and diverse for every socioeconomic, mm-hmm. every race, every demographic to meet the needs, age, every aspect? We need to create more opportunity. But because land costs are so expensive, the cost of construction is prohibitive, that we need to understand there are economic factors, not just societal or potential exclusionary or historical prejudice that may exist in communities. Look, they did. But now in 2021, we have a dramatic need to create diverse and affordable and accessible housing stock. How do we go about it?
Right.
These kind of proposals are a hammer that says, towns, you have not done it, and the state knows better. But we do need to create opportunities, mm-hmm. and we need to create them not just in our suburbs, but also in our cities.
For sure.
In our rural communities, mm-hmm. because we need to generate that from a standpoint of housing people, giving them opportunities to pursue the American dream, but also to be able to keep talent in our state and grow our economy and businesses. Yeah. There are many motivations, mm-hmm. but I think it has to be done collaboratively, Melissa, not with the state saying that it knows better by these kind of powerful and very strong arm, in my mind, mandates, mm-hmm. but to be able to collaborate with neighborhoods,
yeah, we have
with
to
local
do
municipal government,
we have to find
state
that balance,
mm-hmm. and federal mm-hmm. government to work together. Fairfield is a great example. We have Pine Court, we have Sullivan McKinney that were built way before 1990.
Right,
that was a collaboration between all of these entities that create mm-hmm. housing opportunities for many of our residents. Why are we not going back to that?
Right. Senator Wong, I'm so sorry. We've run out of time, but I look forward to talking to you again next week. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. There is a compromise that can be done when all people work to collaborate.
All right. Thank you so much, Senator Wong. We'll talk again on Monday of next week.